Today's guest, one of the world's leading technology forecasters and business strategist, Dan Burris. You're listening to the Eagles Talent Connection podcast.
Eagles Talent Connection is a speakers and entertainment bureau. To bring talent to your next event, visit us online at www.eaglestalent.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Eagles Talent Connection podcast, and I'm your host, Sheldon Senek. Over the past two decades, Dan Burris has established a worldwide reputation for accurately predicting technology-driven trends and their direct impact on the world of business. I recently had the opportunity to talk with Dan on an array of topics ranging from business strategy to technology and social media. So sit back, relax, and think about the future. Dan Burris, welcome to the Eagles Talent Connection podcast.
Hey, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you on. Dan, the more I research you, the more I learn you have such an amazing awareness of technology. On top of that, and so smartly, you find a way to integrate your tech awareness into business. When I read your articles or watch you speak, you sincerely have a true, unmistakable passion about technology. Was there one thing particular, like an invention or something that helped propel this passion to the forefront?
Good question. Actually, I have had a lifelong passion for technology and science. I think some of it came from my father, who was an engineer and actually pioneered a lot of innovations and patents in the electrical and utility industries. But maybe what some people may not realize is, of course, I've started five companies over the years. Two of them were national leaders in the first year. One of them was in aviation. I have my own airplane design. I was actually a test pilot for that. And it developed some really great ways of taking research and cutting-edge technology and learning how to make that profitable. Before that, I actually taught biology and physics for about 9 years. And if you really go back in ancient times, when I was a sophomore in college, I was the first undergraduate in the United States to direct a federal research grant. So I am, in other words, I'm a science guy, I'm a research guy, but I also am a business guy. So I've taken my interest in technology and my research capabilities as an educator and my ability to be an entrepreneur, which I've done, obviously, with five companies so far. And that's how I've been able to make technology come alive. And one other little thing I'll throw out very quickly, and that is that I treat every speech as a mini consultation. I have some core concepts that I think are important to share with my audiences. But the thing I think that I'm very proud of is that I really research who I'm speaking to so that I'm making my material meaningful. And I try to do it so that it is not just, here's what the organization can do, I do that. Mm-hmm. But I think the real magic is I make everything personal. So there is something that each individual feels they can do that will help them as an individual, as well as it will help the organization.
In Arthur Miller's play, Death of a Salesman, the character Willie Loman sinks into his chair, realizing that technology in the world is passing him by. Anyone who's familiar with his play knows that many Willie's issues go much deeper. Perhaps he could have been saved if he had read your book, Technotrends, which brings up, in your book, you have your own set of characters. One is Maury, a big businessman, an old horse, who has been making money using the same old tricks. He quickly realizes that the old ways won't be profitable in the coming future. You know, first, what I love about this book, even though it was published in, I believe it was 1993, the core of this message really remains valid. When you first put it out, did it meet some resistance from the Maoris in the world? And also, can you talk about its overall message?
Yes, you know, the book has been pretty amazing. It was published in 1993. Within just a few months, it was in over 13 languages, and it has been a bestseller in the United States, in Europe, Asia, and I found out actually back around 95 that it was a bestseller in China. It was unfortunately the bootleg version, but it was still nonetheless a bestseller even in China. And even today,
so
it is selling.
You didn't approve the translation.
And, no, I didn't. But you know, it helped make a difference there, so I feel very good about that. And the book is selling well today. As a matter of fact, I just talked to a group from Google, and they had all just read the book. Remember, this is a 93 book, and they couldn't believe how not only on target it was, but the again, the timeless strategies that were put in there. So when I write books or give speeches, what I try to do is talk about timeless principles and technologies that will get more powerful over time rather than less powerful over time. You know, a quick little side note here is I was just giving a speech 2 days ago where I was sharing some tech-driven trends, and I admitted to the audience that here is a list that I've been sharing since 1987. And they looked at the list, and they were all taking notes, you know, feverishly. And these were senior executives and engineers, and not low-level engineers. These are people that were at the C-suite or VP or higher, but many of them had been engineers to start with, taking notes furiously. And I said to them, you know, the reason this is so timely right now, yet it was published in the 80s, is because I try to write about things that actually become more powerful over time. That way, and I did that when I wrote Technotrends, and I think that's why it's done so well. I'm working on a new book that will be out in about a year from now, and I'm doing the same thing. I'm trying to make it a timeless book rather than one that's here today, gone tomorrow.
And I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, for people who are just discovering you and wondering, does he really think about the future? Well, you know, let's go back into the book. And in 1993, you wrote, "Desktop video conferencing is an example of advanced electronic mail, similar to telephone conference, but with live motion video." And you even talk about advanced phones having the ability to become telecomputers. So 17 years ago, when you published Technotrends, looking back on it, what are the biggest surprises in technology and the biggest surprises in companies embracing or resisting change?
I think the biggest, from a technology standpoint, and again, I think many people that are aware of me know that I've been doing this for 27 years now through Burr's research, and we research global innovations in all areas of technology and then derive trends from those. How will that change consumers? How will that change customer service? What are the ways that we can use those tools to gain an advantage? And I think, again, using the characters in that book, what that did was it helped bring it alive because I used the number of characters that are typical of most of the types that are out there. And there have been things that I have shared over the years that have met resistance. I remember, I'll go back in time, this is a kind of a classic example, because I've had very good luck with changing how people think. And let me just stop there for a second. I believe that managers change how people behave. I think leaders change how people think. And they don't tell them what to think, but they change their context for how do they think about technology and how it can be used? How do they think about how they can use it to shape their career and their personal lives and so on? So in changing how people think, again, without telling them what to think, I have had, I feel really good. But let me give you an example of one that that was frustrating. And that was back in 1987. I remember exactly where it was, Rochester. and I was speaking to the top 40 executives of IBM for about for an entire morning. It was about a 3.5-hour meeting. And they were in a big semicircle. And, of course, at that time, they were into mainframes and hardware, and they had very little software. And one of the key points I was making to them is their profitability starting in the early 90s would shift. and it would shift from software to software and services, but they would still have hardware because the hardware would remain the foundation that they could derive the more profitable software and services, and they needed to understand that shift and move forward.
Right.
And the sooner the better. Well, when I finished, they said, very stimulating, but they actually didn't do anything about it. And, of course, you or some of you listening to this might remember in 1993 they lost more money than any other company in the history of the planet Earth. And that was because the world was changing to software and services, but they weren't.
Right.
By the way, a little side note, right now IBM's prime profitability, I think it's like 80% of it, is coming from software and services, yet they do have hardware. So, you know, the history shows I was right in that presentation, and by the way, there are people that have, many of those executives left IBM and have gone to other tech companies and have hired me over the years because they remember my presentation, and it's been fun. But for the most part, there have been times like that. I remember talking to Motorola about the shift from cellular, going from analog cellular to digital cellular. They were slow to make that shift, even though I pointed it out very clearly as a definite. And they lost their lead to Samsung and some of the others and Nokia and have been slow to recover it. So I have a strong feeling and passion for my message because, as I have said on the platform many times, I leave out the parts I can be wrong about. And so I take that very seriously because I know that I can influence. And in that influence, I want to share the parts of the future, the things that we know that will absolutely happen. I call it certainty.
Right.
And separate out the things from that we are not as certain about. And when you take away and strip away all the things that you're not certain about, and you're left with certainty, you have much lower risk and much more power.
Many companies often face this thought, to use technology to determine the direction of the business or let the business determine the role of technology. Perhaps what I'm driving at is goals, technology, and strategy are so closely related. Do you think that's a correct assessment?
Well, that is an excellent question that you're bringing forward. And first of all, technology is an enabler. It is, its main role is to enable. However, what's important to understand is that technology changes reality.
Uh-huh.
In other words, ever since the dawn of time, man, ever since we've been on this planet, has
right.
been doing things that were before impossible.
Uh-huh.
Let's face it, this phone call at one point in human history was impossible and record. So the things that we thought were impossible over history shows weren't. So what changes that? Well, give me a new tool, I'll change the world. You know, give me the internet, what happens? Hey, we'll change the world with it. Give me a mobile phone with streaming video in high definition. You know what? I'll change how we educate and train.
Uh-huh.
So the point I'm making is that unlike in the past, it's important for us to have an understanding and awareness of the new tools and the how they are game changers, and how that game changing will affect your industry, so that then when you determine your strategies, you have a technology awareness in terms of not the tool, but the impact of the tool. How is it going to change how we live, work, and play? Because if your customers are changing faster than you're changing, you got trouble. If your customers are learning faster than you're learning, you've got trouble. And by the way, one of the key messages that I'm sharing right now
mm-hmm.
is that we are going through no longer a change. We are starting to go through what I would call a global transformation,
mm-hmm.
which is far more significant. Actually, in my speeches, I've been sharing that the global economic recession is a fog that is keeping us from seeing the global economic transformation that is far more profound, and unlike a recession which comes and goes, this transformation is here to stay. And it does represent huge opportunity for those who are aware, and of course huge problems for and disruption for those who have their head in the sand.
Every time I purchase, or even a company purchases a cell phone, a computer, or we upgrade software, the conscious begins to talk, mainly it says, will it be out of date by next month? And is there a sense that technology develops faster than we can handle, or is that kind of more of a myth?
Well, you know, I've got here's an insight that I'll share with you, and that is the rapid obsolescence is actually a non-issue.
Mm-hmm.
The reason it's really not the issue is something I call higher tech. Not high tech, higher tech. Higher tech says it's not the tool, it's how you use it.
Right.
So if I'm getting a tool and I'm a technology of some kind and I'm using it in a way that my competitors are not using it and I'm getting tremendous competitive advantage from it, then how quickly it becomes obsolete is a non-issue. If, however, I am using it in the same way that my competitors are using it, then I'm merely keeping up, which in reality is a fool's game because there is no advantage in keeping up.
Right.
But it's expensive. So I like to suggest I want to find advantage in the tool so that the obsolescence issue is muted.
So let's switch gears just a little bit. Let's discuss social media. You recently wrote an article on our blog regarding the mistakes in social media networking and marketing. The impact of social media has been astronomical on a domestic level. What is the impact of social media in the corporate world, and are they handling it right?
Well, this is actually, it's a great question because it brings an example that I'll share with you that comes to mind. I was giving a speech to a large company. Now, how large are they? Well, they've got 43,000 engineers.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, it's a pretty good-sized company and global. Mm-hmm. And I was meeting with their C-suite. I was meeting with the chairman, CEO, and all of the people that report to the CEO. So it was a fairly small meeting, but obviously a very high-level meeting. And the coaching I got from the meeting planner was, don't mention social media, Facebook, Twitter. The CEO personally hates that stuff. And they don't want their employees wasting their time with all this stuff. So don't even get into it. And, of course, I did get into it, actually, because I knew that it was something that would help them out. The current state was there were six companies that were operating separately under this company's name, and his job was to try to bring them all together and to act as one. So, in other words, all these engineers, as I'm using as an example, were all from different different types of divisions that were totally siloed and separate. So here's what I said. I said, why don't we have an internal version of Facebook? Let's do Facebook, but let's do it internally for the engineers so that they have a picture of themselves, they have what their areas of expertise are, what some of their problems they've solved are, and what are some of the things that they're working on, and let's let them develop it. And that way these engineers will get to know and work with each other a little bit better. And I said, why don't we develop an internal version of Wikipedia? Let the engineers create it. Obviously, if you got 43,000 engineers, you got a lot of parts and a lot of solutions.
Right.
Why don't we let them create an internal Wikipedia, which becomes their internal knowledge base? And then I said, why don't we start using Twitter internally? Now, of course, they were a little squirmy on that one because they hate Twitter.
Right.
But I said, just a second, let's think about it. Twitter, for the kids, and even on the Twitter webpage, it says to answer the question, what are you doing? So kids would say, I'm having a pizza, or I'm at McDonald's, or I'm at the mall. And I say, let's change that for the engineers. Why don't we have Twitter, except it answers the question, what problem are you trying to solve? And because it's only about two sentences, it isn't taking a lot of time, but it might get some solutions back from the other engineers. Well, to make a long story short, the company was Lockheed Martin. They called the doing this, they ended up calling it Unity. Remember, they were trying to get six companies working together as one.
Uh-huh.
And they would tell you right now, because they told me, that it was the most significant technological implementation they have had in the last 10 years, cost the least, it got the payoff the fastest, and obviously it was taking social media internally to do something very amazing with it. So I just gave you a big company example of how you could take social media and do something quite amazing with it internally,
uh-huh.
and I didn't even talk about customers. I was talking about internal customers and relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So you can turn social media inside out depending on the size of the organization. And even if you're a small company, there is so much that you can do because we are doing a primary shift that I said in Technotrance. Remember, good old 1993 mm-hmm. Technotrance. One of the things I said in Technotrance is that we are in the information age and we will be entering the communication age. And I said the difference is information age is about informing. It's one way, it's static, doesn't always cause action. The communication age is two-way, it's dynamic, it's interactive, it's engaging, and it causes action. So as the tools develop, you will want to create a communication age organization where you have both informing and communicating. Well, in reality, what is social media all about? Well, it isn't just one-way emails anymore. It is about engagement and two-way communication and dialogue and user-generated content. In other words, my communication age prediction from Technotrends was right on target, and that's one of the reasons this is exploding, is because communicating is far more powerful than just informing.
And this really gives small businesses it gives them new life, really, this type of technology.
Well, you know, all of the technology is helping, is wonderful, because you don't have to be a giant company to be able to use it and take part in it. Mm-hmm. It really is about getting more outside of your box, the old out-of-the-box thinking. And it is not thinking necessarily like a kid, but it wouldn't hurt to talk to some of the kids to find out what they're doing with it. You know, here's another little interesting thing. I'm finding a lot of companies that are middle-sized and big, they have a bunch of baby boomers who are their executives trying to figure out new ways to reach out to customers. And I keep telling them, well, you know, maybe you should have some younger people in that meeting as well, because what we do is we come out with something that a baby boomer would say yes to, but maybe a 20-something wouldn't.
Right.
So, you know, we want to make sure that we're inclusive rather than exclusive when we're even putting our strategies together. And, of course, smaller companies, they don't need the big budgets because, again, of technology, such as software as a service. A good example of that is Salesforce.com, which means I could have one person have customer relationship management software, which normally in the past you would have had to have spent millions of dollars to have access to that.
So I recently watched a clip from Reels where you were interviewed about the last Terminator movie and how the concept of technology used in the storyline is going to play a part in the real world. Movies like this, while they're a thrill to watch, it kind of made me wonder, how much role does Hollywood play in advancing technology?
Well, you know, it's interesting because in some ways you're also saying, what role does science fiction as well? So it could be books, it could be movies, it could be any of those things. Mm-hmm. Of course, they dramatize and in some cases create and show the dark side and the horror side of things. Mm-hmm. But in many cases, what those movie guys are doing is they're actually talking to, in many cases, futurists. I know I've been contacted by some of those companies and helping them, in other words, the film companies, helping them think through some of the possibilities of what might be, what could be. I think one of the things that draws us is the possibility.
Right.
Of this maybe is feasible. So if we go back to Star Trek, where he opened up his little recorder. I mean, heck, that device is not even as cool as an iPod or an iPhone today, because it actually had to open it.
Right.
and it didn't have video. Remember? It was just audio. So actually, that was an antique, even in today's world, and that was Star Trek, at least in the first Star Treks. So I think that a lot of what we see in those shows, the thing that is interesting is that if it can be done, it will be done. And if the human mind really is interested in doing some of these things, you know, it's very hard for us not to just go ahead and do it, because science finds a way.
You know, I think you put it best when you said it's not the technology, it's what you're doing with it. Thinking about technology, I hear more and more talk about Web 2.0. What is it, and what does it mean to businesses?
Well, if you really want to think about Web 2.0, it's the communication age. Mm-hmm. It's asking yourself, am I a communication age company, or am I still just an information age company? Mm-hmm. Am I using the ability to create dialogue and engagement to redefine how I market and how I sell. Am I really allowing two-way versus one-way? For example, a television commercial is one-way, but a contest on the Internet is two-way. Like, for example, the first Super Bowl ad that was created by viewers to be on the Super Bowl. That was several years ago. By the way, that came from working with me and in that with that company and using my seven pillars of digital marketing process. And the idea there was let's get them engaged and let's get them involved in the advertisement rather than, you know, it's just a one-way thing. The dynamic is informing versus communicating. That's what Web 2.0 is about. And if you look at what's next, Web 3.0, which is very predictable, again, I leave out the parts I can be wrong about, that's where we have a 3D web browser. Uh-huh. And we don't need glasses, and we don't need a special screen. It's an interspatial 3D, kind of like an Xbox, except we've got it on our computers and our laptops and our cell phones.
Right.
So instead of depicting the web strictly in as a flat piece of paper, which we have today, it actually can be both a flat piece of paper or a interspatial 3D world environment, which again changes marketing, changes sales, changes interactivity completely.
On the thought of integrating technology into business, what excites you about the future?
Oh, I'm very excited about the future. I mentioned a little earlier that we're leaving what I would call a period of change and getting into a period of transformation. And I'll give you an example of that so you know what I mean by those words. When I was a young guy, I could listen to my albums. I could listen to my Pink Floyd and my Jimi Hendrix and my Allman Brothers, so you can get my ear a little bit here. And I could listen to my albums on one black spinning disc and per album. And then as I got older, all of a sudden something wonderful came along. I could get it all on the CD, which the advantage was it was a smaller spinning disc, one per album, but I got rid of hisses and cracks and pops and scratches.
Right.
So I went crazy and repurchased all my old albums. And that was a welcome change. Today, I haven't changed. I've been transformed by the iPod and the iPhone and those types of devices because now I have, instead of one album per spinning device, I've got all my music on a device that I carry with me at all times. And that did not change how I listen to music. It transformed how I listen to music. And by the way, we're not talking about a cyclical change. We're talking about a linear, permanent change. I'm not going back.
Right.
So in that same way that I've been how I listen to music has been transformed, we're about to transform how we sell. Not change, transform. We're about to transform how we market. We're about to transform how we communicate with each other. We're about to transform how we collaborate with each other. We're about to transform how we educate and train. We're about to transform how we innovate. In other words, am I excited about the future? Oh, you better believe it. And rather than just have it happen, what I would like us to do is to get involved in shaping it and making it positive. Because if we sit back passively, we could create an inhuman world where we're all plugged in and not talking to each other personally. Or we could create a more human world. So if we know where things are going, and we know we're going through transformational change, and we would rather be more human than less human, and more connected rather than less, then with those kind of guidelines, we can create a better company for the organization we work for, a better association, one that's even more engaged and more connected and is using technology but is also realizing we're also human, we're not just technology.
Right.
And so in other words, it's active participation in shaping the future.
You know, I don't know if I'm more excited about technology today or tomorrow, but you have inspired me. And Dan, it has been a real pleasure having you on our podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. My pleasure. Thank you.
If you're interested in bringing Dan in for your next event, Simply visit our website at www.eaglestalent.com or give us a call at 1-800-345-5607. Again, I've been your host, Sheldon Senek. I hope you join us again next time on the Eagles Talent Connection podcast.